The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Well, hot weather in Israel and a bit of an earthquake yesterday down in the Dead Sea area. Only 3.8 on the Richter scale this time around. So I don't know if that really counts as a proper earthquake, but it's been 91 years since the last major earthquake hit Israel. And the statistics show that earthquakes happen here between 80 to 100 years on average, apparently, according to the people who know these things. So the next big one is due very soon indeed, if we believe that the past influences what happens in the future. So everybody's kind of sitting tight and waiting. 500 people were killed in the great Jericho earthquake of 1927.
And that wasn't when the walls came tumbling down. That was something different, right?
That was not when the walls came tumbling down, but it certainly hit Jerusalem. 130-odd people killed in Jerusalem. Wow. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre was damaged. Mm. Temple Mount was damaged. Jericho was quite severely damaged. There was also damage in some of the Jordanian cities. There was also quite a lot of damage in Shechem. People were killed there. So quite a major earthquake. I mean, bearing in mind that the Dead Sea area is really on where two major fault lines come together. The Syrian-African fault line runs across the Jordan Valley. It links with the Great Rift Valley, which, of course, stretches all the way down to southern Africa. So we're on a place where tectonic plates come together. And so this is a very sensitive part of the world, and there is a huge expectation that the next big earthquake will be happening soon. 3.8 on the Richter scale in the meantime doesn't do much damage, do any damage or cause any injuries, fortunately. And we certainly have had quakes in recent times that have been bigger than that, 4 and even going up to the high 4s. But 6.5 was the great one back in 1927. So there is an expectation that the next major earthquake is on the way.
Are there building codes in Israel? I mean, do they build according to, you know, for this concern?
Well, up until now, there haven't really been building codes in Israel. And in fact, a huge program has been rolled out to reinforce the old apartment buildings, which are considered not to be earthquake proof at all. And it's been a massive program that's been rolled out across Israel. Unfortunately, still not enough. But many, many apartment buildings have been reinforced for earthquake purposes. It's a program that's called Tama 38. It's a government-sponsored program. And it's quite interesting in how it's been done. First of all, the building has been reinforced for earthquake. Then a lot of those old buildings have had lifts added to them rather than forcing people to use staircase all the time, and they've been kind of spruced up and made to look a lot better, gentrified, as some of them like to call it. And the way that this has been financed is by the builder adding another floor or maybe even two floors on the top of the building of apartments, and he then is able to sell the additional apartments that are built on the top in order to cover the cost of the whole thing. So it's been quite an interesting program and quite successful in many respects.
Yeah, sounds very interesting indeed. Former Prime Minister Ehud Barak has announced yesterday that he intends to return to politics and form a new anti-Netanyahu party. What more is known about this?
So, apparently the idea that came forward yesterday and that we spoke yesterday about the possibility of the elections being cancelled is what forced Barak to come out of hiding and to make this huge announcement yesterday, even though his new party still doesn't have a name and doesn't have a logo and doesn't have any identity whatsoever. But he felt that he was forced to bring forward the announcement of his intention to form this new party when it became clear yesterday or the day before that there are some thoughts about the possibility of not holding the election at all. And so this caught some people by surprise, even though Barak's name has been thrown around in the political sphere for quite some time, most closely associated with a possible return to the Labour Party, which interestingly enough he's decided not to do. When he was previously Minister of Defence and Prime Minister, he was then a member of the Labour Party, and so now that he's decided that he will be returning to politics at the ripe old age of 77, he has decided that he's going to do it in the form of a brand new party that he plans to that he plans to put together. And it will kind of be a very strong left-leaning party in Israeli political sense. And it's all about anti-Netanyahu. And what he said was, it's not necessarily about how many seats his party will gain, but more about how much attention and how much support he can attract for the left wing, left center wing, which could potentially unseat Netanyahu. And so even though his own poll, which he conducted privately, suggested that he might win as many as 11 seats, apparently Channel 13 conducted a poll as well yesterday, and they decided that the new Barak party probably would only win something like 6 seats. At least that is as of now, and of course many things could change between now and an election, if indeed one is held. But the perhaps the most important thing is that the shift of power between left and right seems to have been influenced by Barak coming out of the shadows. And according to the latest poll, the left wing bloc, which includes the Arab parties and Kahol Lavan, and now the new Barak party, whatever it's going to be, could command 61 seats out of the 120 seats in the Knesset, and that gives it a small majority, or more likely another hung parliament situation, because we know that not all of those left-wing parties will be able to get together to form a coalition. So therefore, even though they potentially have 61 seats, the so-called left bloc, as the press like to position them, they're not going to be able to form a government of 61 seats. And so therefore, we effectively don't have a government situation, at least in terms of the way that that poll has come out. So this is all going to be very interesting. Another chief of general staff joining the fray. I think he's now the fourth former chief of general staff, so become very, very military influenced now. We're seeing our political parties becoming much more influenced by former military people, because it's not only the four former chiefs of general staff who've got senior positions in many of the political parties, but also now Yair Golan has come out with Barak. He's a former deputy chief of general staff, and so he's supported the new Barak initiative. I think there's still a lot of water to flow under the bridge, including this whole decision as to whether there will be an election or not. And by the time we eventually get to whatever we're going to get to, and I'm not sure what the outcome is going to be, I think all of this that we're seeing now in terms of the polls and the way that people are feeling is probably going to change quite substantially.
Yeah, I just wonder if you get to September and anyone is still going to care. Because it is just unbelievable. I mean, now to bring the Barak out of the, as you say, out of the woodwork. I mean, the guy was not exactly dynamic the first time around. He's now 77 years old. He's been out of politics for I don't know how long. I just can't imagine that he's going to set the political world on fire.
I absolutely agree with you. And unfortunately, Barak will always, forever have that poison chalice around his neck of the Camp David
the wire cord
meeting and exactly what transpired there between him and former Palestinian Authority chairman Yasser Arafat, and exactly what Barak offered, because fortunately it wasn't accepted by the Palestinian side at that stage, but he practically offered the family jewels in return for some sort of a peace arrangement. And I think that that caused a lot of anger amongst Israelis who really do want a peace agreement, but felt that Barak had probably gone too far in making the offer that he had made. And the fact that the Palestinian Authority at that stage didn't even accept that was a strong indication to many people that there really isn't a peace deal to be made. At least at that stage, there wasn't one. And to be fair, I don't know that a great deal has changed since then. But certainly at that stage, it became clear to most people who really wanted peace that the peace was not really available.
That was the beginning of the whole decline, I think, of the strong left in Israel, because
absolutely, yeah. I mean, they were weakened substantially by the revelations of how far Barak had gone in making gestures. I mean, gestures is kind of a very polite word to use to describe the offer that Barak had made. But he made substantial offers on Jerusalem and things that most Israelis would not even from the left side of the political spectrum would even have thought about. And he made those offers apparently at Camp David, and yet they were rejected. So, you know, there's really, at that stage at any rate, there was really nothing more to offer.
Absolutely. A minor diplomatic incident arose between Israel and Chile over an incident by the Chilean president to the Temple Mount. What was the incident, Anthony?
So the Chilean president, Sebastián Piñera, has been in Israel on an official visit. He had meetings with President Rubio Rivlin, and indeed he also had a dinner with Prime Minister Netanyahu. So Chile and Israel have a kind of an interesting relationship because there is ostensibly a relatively close relationship between Chile and Israel stretching back to 1949, and yet the Chileans back in 2011, I think, actually formally recognized the existence of a Palestinian state. So that doesn't do a lot of, make it easy for Israel to have these diplomatic relations with Chile, and yet somehow Israel's managed to maintain those, and the Chilean president has been in Israel for his second visit, I think. I think he was here during his previous term as president, but he was visiting, and yesterday he is reported to have taken what is termed as a private visit to the Temple Mount. And during the course of that visit, it became evident, at least to the Israeli Foreign Office, that he was being accompanied by Palestinian Authority officials. Now, that is tantamount to challenging Israel's sovereignty over Jerusalem and over the Temple Mount. And while the Israeli Foreign Office does not mind foreign dignitaries being accompanied by religious officials, perhaps members of the Waqf Council or something like that, people who have a religious role in life rather than a political one, the fact that he was accompanied by political officials representing the Palestinian Authority really grated the Israeli Foreign Office and really represented a challenge to Israel's sovereignty over the Temple Mount and over Jerusalem. And in fact, the Chilean ambassador was contacted and was reprimanded. And we understand that the president immediately, the Chilean president immediately wrote an apology letter to President Rubio Rivlin saying that nothing was intended and apparently that he was not even aware of the fact that these individuals who were accompanying him were even political officials from the Palestinian Authority. And as a sign that things had kind of been put to bed and the apology was accepted, the dinner that was planned after that visit with Prime Minister Netanyahu actually went ahead and took place. And so I think that all has been resolved and the rift has been healed. But I think that it is a point that the Israeli government likes to make with all the sensitivity that surrounds the status of Jerusalem, that Israel has sovereignty over Jerusalem, you know, for better or for worse, whether you like it or whether you don't like it, that is the situation. And while all religions are welcome, including members of the Waqf Council, Muslims and Christians and Jews alike, and indeed others as well, the whole political side is a lot more sensitive.
Yeah, wow. Not a simple situation there at all, as it never is. It's always a very, very difficult one. We don't have a lot of time, only 1 minute, but let's just, if you can, just tell us about Tel Aviv University that has been hosting Cyber Week in Israel this week.
So I think it's very pertinent that, you know, Tel Aviv is the city that hosts this week. And of course, cyber security is all the rage. And there was a lot of there were many senior speakers, including Prime Minister Netanyahu and including the head of the Mossad, Yossi Cohen, who addressed this conference and talked about the cyber world and the importance of cybersecurity. And also in the case of Yossi Cohen, who's the head of the Mossad and who speaks very rarely in a public forum, he spoke about how cyber intelligence has become the main tool in the world of counterterrorism, and that these days, you know, the cyber world is one that the Mossad uses probably more than anything else that they do these days. And that's an interesting shift of things, because once upon a time, the Mossad was, you know, very much regarded as feet on the ground kind of guys who went out and did things in strange places and achieved the unachievable. And apparently these days, a lot of it is being done behind the screens and, you know, deep in the cyber world. And in fact, Yossi Cohen was even presented with an award for achievement in cyber by this particular conference. So I think it's an interesting focus that Tel Aviv University has had this week on this conference, and a lot of interesting little snippets coming out, which we don't always hear about, particularly from the Mossad and, of course, from Prime Minister Netanyahu, who spoke about the importance of the side world from a governmental point of view, which I think is quite fascinating.
Absolutely. Anthony Reich, unfortunately, that's where we have to leave it. It's just gone 8 o'clock. Thank you, as always. We'll catch you on Monday. You have a fantastic weekend. Shabbat Shalom. And we will speak to you then.